Hey, I'm Steph.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Today.
And we're live.
Hey.
How are you?
Great. How are you?
I love being live.
Me too.
Wow. Look at us.
We're actually not live. We're never live.
We're never live. It also is astonishing how much we cut out. Has it gotten better over the years? Do you cut out less now?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Okay. That makes me feel better.
Well, sometimes we just get on these tangents, as you guys know, and they got to go.
Yeah. You know me. If the stuff you hear starts to get annoying, imagine what we cut out. Right? Imagine
true.
What didn't make it.
That's true.
So, but today we're talking about something.
A murder for hire.
Oh, my God. How yep. many people are doing this?
It seems this like a lot.
This is like, it does seem like we've told a few of these.
We have. We've definitely told a few. And there's more to tell.
Oh my God.
Yep.
Okay. Well, let's jump in. Unless you want to tell me something.
The listeners can't see the wink, but he wants me to talk about Patreon.
I winked.
Hey everyone, if you want to get access to a bunch of bonus episodes and other fun perks, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We recently recorded a bonus episode about hunters who got trapped in remote mountains in Kyrgyzstan. And they not only survived being stranded in the mountains for a little while, but then they survived a helicopter crash after that. So if you want to hear them survive kind of 2-in-1.
Dude, you have to listen to the shit that they went through.
It's insane.
As soon as you think it's over, you're halfway.
Yes. Yeah. So it's definitely a good one. Our patrons did vote on that story. And if you want to vote on stories you want to hear, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast, as I have said before, and I will say again. But without further ado, why don't we get into our story for today?
Yeah, let's jump in.
Okay. Our story today takes place in Spokane, Washington. Spokane is in eastern Washington, just 20 miles from the Idaho border. Spokane's overall crime rate sits above the national average, though recent local data indicates significant improvements. The annual citywide crime rate is approximately 56.14 per 1,000 residents. Property crime accounts for the vast majority of incidents, while violent crime makes up only roughly 16%. So things like this don't typically happen in Spokane. On October 11th, 2016, Spokane Valley Sheriff's deputies received the most bizarre call they had ever gotten. A man named Martin Drake walked into a Walmart in the city of Spokane Valley and walked up to an employee and asked if he could use the phone. So he called 911 and said he wanted to report a murder, but it hadn't happened yet. He sounded frazzled on the phone. But according to Spokane County Sheriff's Detective John Oliphant, this man didn't want to give too many details on the phone, but he stressed the fact that he wanted to meet with an officer as soon as possible. What he did tell sheriff's detectives was that it was a former friend from high school who asked him to help her kill someone.
A former friend from high school? Like
yes.
They had a falling out and now they're going to rekindle their friendship with murder?
I don't think they had a falling out. I think they just didn't talk after high school.
Oh, okay.
They're going to rekindle their friendship with murder is crazy.
Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not.
Is that a false characterization of what's happening here?
You're not wrong.
That's
just
insane.
A funny way to put it.
Okay, so who's the person calling in?
His name's Martin Drake.
Martin Drake, okay.
But we're going to refer to him as Drake.
I need to know more. Did you see the computation happening? I'm like, what the I can't make sense of this.
Well, let's keep going. This phone call seemed pretty unbelievable. It was possible that what this frazzled man on the phone was claiming were true, and that there was an active threat on somebody's life. But officers also felt like this could have possibly been a lie to get somebody else in trouble. Even still, investigators immediately opened up an investigation because both things are illegal.
Right, you have to take this seriously.
Absolutely.
Right?
The man arranged a spot with officers for them to pick him up, and patrol was dispatched. During this initial interview, Drake seemed pretty nervous as he gave his statement, but he relayed the information as best as he possibly could. He told officers that a woman he knew from high school, but had not seen in quite a few years, had reached out to him on social media to meet up and then asked him about trying to kill someone in her life. At first...
So it is exactly that.
Yes. And at first, Drake was very taken aback. He didn't know why she would have thought that he would do something like this. But when he realized she was seriously asking him, he knew he had to go to police. During this interview, police were still trying to suss out if this threat was actually real, but Drake was so specific about everything and seemed very shaken by the whole thing, police knew they needed to take this seriously. He told officers he was sick to his stomach after the conversation that he had had with her. Martin Drake didn't even know the guy that she wanted him to kill, but he was extremely concerned for this man's safety. He told police the intended victim was a man named Russell Soderbergh. Russell Soderbergh was born in 1965 and had lived in Spokane Valley area all his life. He had an average childhood. After graduating high school, he joined the family business, working as a glazier in his parents' glass shop. And Russ was well-liked by his friends and family. They claimed he was a good guy and a family man. By the time he was 20, Russell was already married and was starting a family of his own. He and his first wife had a son and daughter together, Scott and Stacy. However, he and his wife decided to get a divorce after 13 years of marriage. And a few months later, during one of his softball games, he met a woman named Marty Maxwell. Russell had been playing on the team with Marty's brother, and when she showed up to watch the game, she immediately caught his eye. He asked her out on a date after one of these games, and she said yes. Marty was in her 20s and over 10 years younger than Russell, but she had experienced a lot in her lifetime. She grew up in the Seattle area and was described as a wild child. She didn't graduate past the 8th grade. She spent her time running around town with the older crowd, just getting into a ton of trouble. Marty had her first daughter at 15 years old with a man who was twice her age. Her daughter ended up living with her grandparents while Marty was out, quote-unquote, doing her thing. So she wasn't a very present mother, especially at this time. I mean, she was a teenager, but she was also kind of being wild out and about.
Doing her thing.
Doing her thing. 3 years later, she had her second daughter, Ashley, and went on to live her life until she got pregnant with her third daughter. By the age of 22, Marty decided it was time to turn her life around. She settled down in Spokane and was working a retail job, which was around the time that she met Russell. Her daughters thought maybe this would be a good thing for their mother. Maybe Russell would help her turn her life around since Russell seemed like a really good guy. And Russell asked Marty to marry him in 2002, 3 years after they met. And in 2007, they had a child together and Marty quit her job to become a stay-at-home mother. And over the next decade, Russell helped Marty mend her relationships with her older daughters. Marty's eldest daughter, Jessica, said she didn't have good times with her mother until she was around 18 years old. That was when they started doing family trips with Russell and his kids. Jessica said Russ was definitely a good father figure to them. She said they all looked at him more like a father than just a stepfather. He always provided for them and had been there for them when they needed him. And after 15 years together, their blended family grew even closer. But now Martin Drake was sitting in an interview room claiming Marty wanted to kill Russell, and investigators wanted to know why.
Well, does he have a life insurance policy?
We'll find out.
Yeah.
Deputies gave Martin Drake a ride over to a substation out in the valley where he met a couple of detectives to further explain everything that had happened. According to Drake, he hadn't thought about Marty since they were probably 15 or 16 years old, which was somewhere around 20 years prior. But out of nowhere, she contacted Drake on Facebook. He thought she just wanted to reconnect with an old friend and agreed to meet up with Marty the next day. And during that meeting, Marty started by making some weird small talk over lunch about what he was up to now. And Drake shared with her that he had actually been in a pretty tough spot in life. At the time, Drake was homeless and had a drug addiction, and he told her he had been living in a field under a park picnic table, and Marty offered to help him. So Drake left this interaction thinking this was a positive one, but the two met up again the following day, and that was when the help that Marty had offered him came with some strings attached. She dropped the bomb that she wanted Drake to kill her husband for her. So I guess that's why she thought he would be willing to do it, because he was in an extremely tough spot in his life, and he was probably a little bit desperate. At least that's what she thought.
Right. Not cool, Marty.
Right. So Marty Soderbergh told him that she was unhappy in her marriage, but she couldn't just get a divorce because she didn't work, and she would be left with nothing. She also said she had taken out a $300,000 life insurance policy on her husband.
There it is.
Yeah. She had already planned the whole thing out. She just needed someone to actually carry out her plans. She wanted Drake to shoot him on Halloween night in front of their kids while they were trick-or-treating so that she would have an alibi.
Which is Jesus Christ.
Incredibly dark and cold plans, but these are her plans. Drake said Marty was pretty calm, cool, and collected during this whole interaction. It was as if they were having a completely mundane conversation, which Drake said made him feel extremely uncomfortable. He felt sick. He couldn't believe what she was asking him, but at that point, he played it cool. This second meeting with Marty had occurred on October 11th, the same day that Drake called the police, which meant it would have been only 2.5-ish weeks later that she wanted the job done. So police knew that time was of the essence. They couldn't make an arrest without knowing if this was actually true. Martin Drake had a lengthy criminal history, mostly involving drugs and felony property crimes. They did believe Drake, but they needed proof. Even if Drake was telling the truth, they couldn't charge Marty Soderbergh with really anything at this point. They could have her arrested for harassment, which is a very low-level felony, and it involved threatening to kill somebody. But if they stopped there and arrested her for this lesser charge, they could have wound up in a situation where the charge didn't stick. Detectives also decided they couldn't risk warning Marty's husband, Russell. If they were to talk to him, there was a chance that he would confront her to talk about it, and that would give her time to flee or potentially just finish him off herself. So given the threat she posed to him, they needed to build a solid case on her first. And they knew their best bet to get as much information as possible was by having Drake continue to talk to her, but this time he'd be wearing a wire. Drake had a cell phone, but it only worked while he was using Wi-Fi, so he had to contact police the following day around noon to figure out these next steps. And that was when investigators asked him if he would be willing to help them further, and he agreed. So with the officers listening in, Drake called Marty to arrange another meeting. This would not be an easy job for Drake. He'd have to kind of act like an undercover agent and play it cool to get the information that the police needed to make an arrest. And they weren't entirely sure that he could do it. It was a lot to ask of him. The investigators were pretty anxious about this, but they told Drake just to speak to her as normally as he possibly could and arranged a meet for the next day, which he did. And she agreed to meet up the next day around 10 a.m. And that was when the sting operation began. During Marty and Drake's meeting, officers would be in a nearby car listening to their conversation live, and they had multiple surveillance units. Despite playing it cool on the phone, Drake was really nervous for this meeting. He knew if he did or said something wrong, the whole investigation could blow up and Marty could walk free. It was also very dangerous for him. It was possible, if something had tipped her off, that there was the possibility that she could harm him while he was in the car with her, and they didn't know whether or not Marty had access to firearms or anything like that, so he was taking a major risk. As soon as Drake and Marty got into the same car, the conversations about the plans to kill her husband were instantaneous. Marty portrayed Russ to be an evil person, and she couldn't bear to be with him anymore. Investigators got Marty on recording saying, quote, "You know what he tells me all the time? I'm worth more dead than I am alive, which is true because of my insurance. And I'm just sitting back thinking, you know what, motherfucker? I'm gonna get insurance on you." So Marty had taken out a life insurance policy on her husband to get a ton of money after his death, kind of as a gotcha for him.
What?
Because he was
as
saying-
As a gotcha?
Because according to her, he keeps saying, "You're worth more dead than alive." Because she has a life insurance policy on herself. So she's like, "Oh, you think I'm worth more? Actually, you're going to be worth more."
I see. I'm confused why she has a life insurance policy.
People have life insurance policies. It's not always for nefarious reasons, you know?
Right, I know, but I'm just saying, like, she doesn't really, whatever.
Drake listened to everything Marty had to say and acted like he was on her side. But then he told her he wasn't sure if Halloween was the best time to do it. And Marty did agree with him, saying she didn't blame him for not wanting to do it that night. There would be a ton of parents out that night trick-or-treating with their kids, which meant there would be a lot of witnesses. And Marty said, quote, "That would be stupid, and I'm not stupid."
Right. Except that it was your idea. Hmm.
If killing her husband on Halloween night wouldn't work, she did have a backup plan. She said if her husband were going out of town and he stopped at a rest area, that would be a good place for a hit to happen. And Drake agreed with her and said, yeah, like he got robbed. She implied that she would cut Drake in on the $300,000 life insurance policy. And Marty also considered the scenario of Russell dying while he was at work. If Drake could make that happen, there would be an additional payout through his employer. Drake knew enough about life insurance policies to ask, is there an exception for certain circumstances under which he dies? Like, does it have to be an accident for Marty to get the money? Because she had to make sure of that. And Marty responded, quote, if he got shot or whatnot, he's covered. Haha, that's the only reason I went with, it's the more expensive insurance.
Right. Oh my God.
But these questions that Drake asked her in the car made him seem more reliable or trustworthy because like he's
willing
like,
to do this.
Yeah, willing to do it because he's like, oh, well, is there any sort of stipulation on this life insurance? Like, what do I have to do? You know, he's asking all these questions and the investigators are sitting in the cars listening to him like kind of freestyle that. And they're like, he's really good.
He's good. We should hire him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully he gets something out of this.
Yeah. She also laid out exactly what Drake should do to cover his tracks once Russell was dead. She told Drake as soon as the job was done, he should dispose of all of his clothes that he wore. That way, there was no blood, no gunpowder residue, nothing. She went even as far as to tell Drake that she would get him coveralls, a 5-gallon bucket, some concrete mix, water, and a getaway car. The bucket and the concrete were going to be used to mix up the concrete and then put the gun in the concrete to dispose of it during his getaway. And after the job was done, Marty instructed Drake to get away quickly and then pull over somewhere, mix up the cement really quick, and make it look like he was doing a concrete job. So he's in coveralls with a bucket of concrete. I don't know. This is her backup plan. By this point, the information collected on the wire was more than enough to prove that Drake had been truthful with investigators. But then the conversation took a bit of a weird turn. After laying out this entire plan to murder her husband, Marty told Drake that she could buy a place and they could move in together there. The conversation turned into Marty trying to flirt with Drake and suggest that they get together. She started by asking Drake if he planned on getting married again. He told her that he would like to get married again. And then Marty said, quote, "All right, so let me ask, would you get married to me? Because today I was sitting there at the house, I was going to pick you up, and then I was going to get out and give you a hug, and I was going to end up kissing you. And then I was like, no, I'll wait, haha, but I want to so bad."
The level of delusion is astounding.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks that this guy is going to be like, oh yeah, I'll marry you. That turned out well for the last guy.
Yeah.
Hello? What?
So let me ask you, would you get married to me?
No. What are you talking about? Did they hook up previously and they weren't really like quote unquote friends? That was what I was going to ask earlier, but it seemed less relevant.
He never mentioned anything about them ever having a relationship. I think she probably just knew that he was in a tough spot and thought that he was desperate enough to get out of his situation that he would do anything to do it, you know?
Right. But I guess I'm just thinking like if it really was like her friend or if she was just banging him a couple times, I don't know.
Well, he hadn't seen her in 20 years, so if they had some sort of relationship in high school, that was long gone at this point.
Yep.
But I don't even think they did.
What? How does somebody get here, man? Yeah. I think it's hard to wrap my head around
yeah.
where she's currently at.
Well, yeah. That's good, right?
Yeah. Do you have life insurance?
Right.
Okay.
And the conversation kept going from there. She even suggested they move in together, but then told Drake that he wasn't even her first choice as a hitman. She had originally asked a different friend, Dennis Bierke. Marty told Drake that Dennis had declined to help, so this plot had been in the works for at least a few months. So Drake took a beat and said, "What do you mean you told another guy? What is he gonna think when he sees that your husband was killed? Isn't he gonna know?" And Marty assured Drake that Dennis, quote, "ain't gonna say jack. I know Dennis." She told Drake that she would let him in on a secret. She knew he wasn't going to say anything because she and Dennis had slept together, and he thinks she and him are going to get together after all of this. She was happy to have Dennis in her back pocket because anytime she needed anything, he was there. She said, quote, "he's on the line for a fire." And detectives didn't know what that meant at the time, but they made a note of that to check in on it later. It's just funny to me that she's like talking to Drake like this. And she's like, "Well, would you marry me?" do you want to move in with me? And then she's like, well, yeah, I have this other guy, but he's just good to have in my back pocket because we've slept together and he'll do anything for me. Except murder your husband. I don't know. It's just like, what? She's admitting a lot. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's just like total lack of rational thinking.
She's not holding anything close to her chest, you know? Like, she's laying out all the cards. She's also admitting that Dennis is guilty of something else.
Right.
She's like, well, he's on the line for a fire, so he won't say Jack.
So he's an arsonist?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. We're going to find that out later, but yes.
Wow.
Yep.
It's a lot to take in.
Yes. A lot of information in just a few sentences. So after 3 hours, the meeting came to an end, and Drake...
3 hours?
3 hours of her yapping and incriminating herself. Crazy.
Wow. Yeah. And she hasn't seen him in 20 years, has talked to him for a cumulative time of 4 hours.
Just maybe. About. Yep.
Wants to marry him.
Yes, wants to marry him and wants him to first kill her husband. Yes.
Right.
So he had one final question for her. He asked her how she would feel after this incident. Would she freak out once her husband was dead? And her recorded response was, quote, no, honestly, I don't have a conscience. If I knew I could get away with it and do it myself, it would have already been fucking done.
Honestly, I don't have a conscience.
No, wow. Honestly, I don't have a conscience.
What a phrase.
Yeah.
What a sequence of words.
Yeah, and also fully on recording, listened to live by police. They're like, we got it.
Yeah, I mean,
ladies and gentlemen, we got him.
Yeah, open and shut, but I'm sure they'll keep, if I know the cops, they're going to let her keep going.
Of course.
Just to see what else she says.
Yeah.
But is it psychopathy?
Like, so, like sociopath, like she has no
emotion? She just doesn't care.
Yeah, could be. We can't diagnose her, right? But like, it seems pretty unfeeling.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, you got it. You hit the nail on the head. Because Drake later said psychopath was a good word to describe Marty Soderbergh. She was so callous about this whole thing. But investigators had another problem. In Washington State, a crime like attempted murder isn't completed until there's a substantial step taken. So to arrest her for attempted murder, they needed her to take action herself, like buying a gun or something like that. They didn't want anything to happen to Russ, and Marty said that she would do it herself if she knew she wouldn't get in trouble, so they needed to do this very quickly. But she had already talked about buying a gun, however, she hadn't actually gotten one, so investigators decided their best bet was to give Marty the opportunity to buy a gun. So 5 days after this initial wiretap, investigators began another sting operation with Drake, and this time they wanted him to get in touch with her and let her know that he found someone that would sell her a gun for $50 and see if she would meet once again. And Drake had never bought a gun before, but that sounded cheap even to him. So once again, he was nervous Marty might catch on.
Yeah, I mean, what year is this?
This is 2016.
Wow. Okay, so $50 is quite cheap
for
a gun. Uh-huh. I feel like it's got to be at least $500.
I don't really know.
Maybe
I wouldn't know.
$200? I don't know, man. Well, they're just trying to get her to do it. They're not trying to... They're trying to make the boundary as low as possible, but that just doesn't seem believable to me.
That's why Drake was concerned.
Sorry, you go ahead.
That's why Drake was concerned, because it seemed too cheap of a number. And he's like, she might know that this is fake.
Yeah, but she's insane.
Yeah. So Drake called Marty and told her the news that he had a guy to sell a gun for $50. And she took the bait and agreed to the meeting on October 17th. And once again, detectives were listening in. Marty drove her pickup truck and picked up Drake, and he told her the guy with the gun would meet them in a Walmart parking lot, so that was where the exchange would be taking place. When Drake got into Marty's car, he was doing amazingly. He was saying things to Marty that made him sound incredibly credible. He told her this gun guy had another gun, but it wasn't automatic, and they didn't want that because they'd have to worry about shell casings. And he wanted $200 for that one instead of $50, so this was a much better deal. And this is all, like, improv.
So he's selling it.
Yes, yeah.
Well?
Police hadn't told him to say any of that.
So he's just freestyling and doing great.
Yes, they were very impressed that he was able to come up with this so quickly. Everything he said was so natural. One of the detectives even said, quote, I don't know that an undercover officer could have done a better job than he did.
Drake, I think you have a new job opportunity.
Right? Yeah.
If you can get clean.
And Drake continued doing this improv on the way to the Walmart parking lot. And when they got there, he spotted the black Acura that they were looking for. Inside were two detectives. They were parked about 70 yards away from where Marty had stopped. She gave Drake the money, and he was supposed to go over to the car to buy the gun and then come back. So Drake walked over to the car with the detectives, with the money out in front of him, showing them that he got it, and then he jumped into the back seat of the car and said, "Here you go." He handed them over $50 and said, "Yep, that came from her." They couldn't believe how easy this had been. It was officially enough to arrest Marty. Officers weren't sure if Marty already had a weapon of her own, so when they got out of the car, they had their guns drawn. They had Marty exit the car and took her into custody for questioning. And having her in custody was a big sigh of relief because they knew that Russ would finally be safe. And of course, Marty was playing incredibly dumb. She tried to tell investigators that there was no murder plot and this was all one big misunderstanding. She did not realize that they had her on multiple recordings and they had been doing a sting operation for multiple days.
Yeah, well, she's gonna try anything to get out of this, right?
Of course. She claimed Russell was both physically and emotionally abusive to her, and she had no intention of hurting him. She did say she had a big mouth, and sometimes she would say things that she didn't mean. It was obvious to investigators that Marty hadn't put together that she had been recorded. So they asked her straight up, is there any reason why there would be recordings of people having a conversation about her husband's death? And she said, there shouldn't be. So police amped it up and said, what if there was a recording about your husband being shot on Halloween? And that was when Marty snapped, telling them there was no conversation of that, but since they said that, it was a dead giveaway for Martin Drake being behind this. So once they said, shooting your husband on Halloween, she's like, well, now it's Martin Drake. She told them at that point she thought it would be best for her to get an attorney because no matter what she said, they weren't going to believe her.
Right.
Duh, girl.
Well, yeah. I mean, at that point, they're just playing with her.
No, of course.
Yeah.
But also, how could she not realize that it was Martin Drake before when he was the one who got into the car and then detectives got out and arrested her? Like, duh.
Yeah, the fact that she didn't immediately put that together is kind of crazy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Time for an attorney. Good luck.
Right. But she's acting as if, like, this is all so ludicrous that they would think that she did this.
Of course she is.
You're never going to believe me, so I guess I should just get an attorney.
Right. Whatever you
okay.
want. Yeah.
Sure.
It's like the words that come out, the noise that you make with your mouth, it just does not matter.
Yeah. They charged her with criminal solicitation to commit murder. At that point, they had to break the news to Russell that his wife was in police custody and she had been planning his murder with two separate men.
Now, I have to ask the question, was she not a nightmare in the marriage to Russell? Like, what? How long? How did this go on for so long?
It does not seem like they had a good marriage.
Okay.
I'm going to get into that too. Detective John Oliphant called Russell's business and told them that he needed to talk to Russell right now. Over the phone, he told Russell, "Sorry I have to call you like this, but I want you to know everybody's safe. Nobody is hurt, but your wife is in custody." He'd explain everything once he got there, but this was not a conversation to have over the phone. That afternoon, investigators met with Russell at his and Marty's home, and they told him they had a search warrant and wanted to search the home. He still had no idea what she could have possibly done. He thought maybe she wrote bad checks to somebody, but he was never going to guess that she had tried to get him killed twice. Detective Oliphant decided the best thing to do was to just be direct about what happened. So they broke the news that Marty had attempted to put a hit out on him, and they had her on surveillance twice, meeting with someone who she believed would be the hitman. And Russell's reaction was, quote, "How's something this stupid going on?" So he wasn't like, heartbroken. He was just like, how could she possibly be that dumb?
That's his reaction.
Kind of, yeah.
Wow.
When they asked Russell about the alleged abuse, he told them that wasn't true. They had a quote-unquote typical marriage with ups and downs, but he never abused her. Russell told police there was one incident when the cops were called, but that was blown out of proportion. In 2003, Russell was watching something on TV and Marty got in his face, screaming at him. He put his hands up and somehow her dentures cut her gums, so she called the cops on him and had him arrested. Now, this is according to Russell, and I'm sure that there is another side to this story, and then the actual side, right? The actual incident. So I don't necessarily know that this is entirely true, or maybe it's painting him in a better light. I don't know. Maybe it is what happened. But it doesn't seem like they had a very good marriage.
Right. Well, I mean, certainly Marty's an unreliable narrator.
Yeah. I think we could say that safely.
But yeah, it's certainly possible. But she's alleging like repeated abuse, no?
Yes, I believe she was. Russell said he thought everything was okay in their relationship at this time. He told investigators about the weekend that they had just shared just before her arrest. They went and picked apples, they did chores around the house, they went out to dinner together, completely normal stuff.
So, and she's just doing that unfazed.
Yeah, completely unfazed, planning his murder for many months at this point.
Oh boy, that's so cold. Cold as ice.
Yeah, it is. Investigators wrapped up with Russell saying they would keep him in the loop about how the investigation was going on, and then they left. During follow-up interviews with family members, they suggested the marriage was more volatile than Russell described. Jessica, Marty's daughter, said her mother's relationship with Russell was definitely toxic. She would fight with him, he'd fight with her, she'd kick him out of the house, and he would leave. The majority of their fights revolved around money. Jessica recalled numerous fights about money. Russ would buy golf clubs, and Marty would get pissed off because she couldn't spend the money on something else. Money was always a huge thing with her. Jessica said, quote, "You borrow money from her, and it was like selling your soul to the devil." Jessica said she was very greedy, and all she wanted was money, which is why she wanted her husband murdered 3 weeks after the insurance policy she took out on him went into effect. So she had just taken out this insurance policy. Like, she was like, yeah, kill him on Halloween, because that's 3 weeks after it's active. During their investigation, they did also circle back to the comment that she had made about a fire that had occurred in her mobile home. She mentioned it to Drake during their sting operation when she brought up the other man she attempted to hire for the hit. When they dug a little bit deeper, they did uncover that in September of 2013, Marty and Russell's mobile home had burned down. Marty and her family had been out of town at the time. However, their mobile home had burned to the ground and they lost everything. Detective Oliphant found insurance payouts around $58,000. A neighbor had actually come out and was attempting to hose down the trailer as they called 911. The neighbor had said that the window AC unit had been on fire. And even though the insurance company had settled on the AC unit being the cause of the fire, there was never any determination as to what was wrong with it. There was some suspicion on their part, but there wasn't enough for them to deny her payment. So the Soderbergs received a very large check. But now that Marty Soderberg was under investigation for insurance fraud, they suspected this was very likely foul play. So investigators got into contact with Marty's friend, Dennis Bjerke. Detectives found his place of business and told him they were there due to an investigation into Marty Soderberg, and he agreed to talk with them. Although he agreed to an interview, investigators could tell he was extremely anxious. However, he was as forthcoming as they could have hoped for him to be in a situation like this. Dennis admitted to what they suspected he had done, telling them that yes, he had set the fire in 2013. He told them Marty had asked him to burn down her house because she wanted the insurance money to move and leave Russell. But somehow, she got the money and didn't leave Russell.
Right.
Dennis said the whole thing was all her plan, and he agreed to do it because she had promised they would be together in the future. It's almost like it's exactly the same situation. She's like, do this for me and we can run away and be together.
Interesting.
So they collected the evidence and charged her with first-degree arson and insurance fraud on top of solicitation to commit murder. They believed Marty really enjoyed getting away with the fire and getting this very large check, but that excitement was very short-lived because the money went fast. And at some point in 2016, something clicked when she realized she could get a much larger payout for her husband's death. Instead of tens of thousands of dollars, she could get hundreds of thousands of dollars. Dennis also confirmed that Marty had asked him to shoot Russell, but he turned her down. He told them the exact same story that Drake had told police. which confirmed that she definitely had this plan in effect for a while. It really didn't take police long to piece this all together. The whole investigation lasted a week. And now, 39-year-old Marty Soderberg was in jail awaiting trial for the attempted murder of her husband, and she was facing the charges of insurance fraud and arson from 2013. News of Marty's plot hit the news, and the community was shocked that something like this was happening in Spokane. They did not hear those sorts of things every day. Meanwhile, Marty had called Russell when she got into booking, trying to do damage control. She calls him, telling him not to believe anything they were telling him, and this is all one big misunderstanding, but as soon as he heard it was her, he just hung up the phone.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Protect your peace, Russell.
Yeah.
Not everyone was convinced Marty deserved to spend the rest of her life in prison. Marty's daughter Jessica and her uncle, so Marty's brother, put their money together to hire Marty a private attorney. They felt, since the story was all over the news, Marty probably wouldn't get a fair trial. And this private attorney worked on getting her a plea deal. And they managed to get a pretty good deal. They offered to resolve the murder for hire and the arson case, and with good behavior, she could get out in 7 to 8 years. Jessica thought her mother would take this plea because then she would definitely be able to watch her kids and grandkids grow up. But Marty told her daughter they were going to take it to trial. She had a better chance against her peers. And Jessica was furious with her mother and thought she was stupid for taking that route. Marty still thought she was smarter than everyone else and that they didn't have enough on her and she'd get off.
Did they show her the tape?
I don't think they did. But I feel like her attorney should have known that they had recorded.
Right. This has to have been made apparent to her, or she's ignoring it.
I think she still thought she could get away with it.
Yeah. I mean, this is maybe one of the most exquisite examples of the Dunning-Kruger effect. She just doesn't know anything, but she thinks that she knows everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. In what world is this going to go well for you? I have no idea.
In no world. That's why Jessica was like, you're a dummy. Please take the plea deal. Don't you want to see your grandkids grow up?
Right. Well, sometimes you can't help stupid.
That's
true. Can you?
You can't. Marty's first trial for solicitation to commit first-degree murder and attempted first-degree murder began in March of 2018. Patrick Schaff, the lead prosecutor on the case, was pretty confident going in. They had incredible recordings of Marty. He felt like all they really had to do was press play and let the jury hear what Marty had said. But it was also about strengthening that with Drake and Dennis's testimony. Yeah, because not only do they have these insane incriminating recordings of her actual voice, but they also have Dennis and Drake.
Yeah, I mean, did they video record her buying the gun too?
I don't think it was on video, but they had the audio recordings of everything she said.
You will buy this gun to kill your husband for $50.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes.
Every conversation they had, except for the very first one, was recorded.
Wow.
And it was 3 hours of conversation. So the prosecutor's like, we got this in the bag. And honestly, he was right, because once the recordings were introduced in trial, they turned even Marty's most loyal supporters against her. Jessica had stood by her mother through everything because she did not believe what they were claiming could be true. But after she heard the audio recordings, there was no denying what had happened. And I've already said it, but I feel like we should bring it up again. In part of the recordings, Marty can be heard saying, quote, honestly, I don't have a conscience. Seriously, I don't. I mean, I wish I kind of did, but I don't. She's like, I would have killed him myself if I could get away with it. Yeah, I wish I had a conscience, but I really don't.
Right.
As a juror, you're sitting there thinking like,
done.
What?
Yeah, done.
Okay. It's like, okay, I guess I'm going to be home for dinner.
Right.
You know? Marty's attorney only had one card to play. The defense was claiming entrapment, that Drake had come up with this plan and put the idea in Marty's head.
I was actually going, while this plan was being hatched, I'm really curious what constitutes entrapment. Because they gave her, quote unquote, the opportunity, but they kind of like went pretty far.
But the plan was never thought up by anyone other than Marty. She was the one who said, I want you to shoot him on Halloween. And then Drake was like, Halloween's probably not a good night. And then she's like, yeah, you know what? When he's on a trip, you can shoot him at a gas station. Or if you shoot him at work, we get even more money. Like, she's the one coming up with the plans. So it was never Drake being like, you know what would be a good idea?
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying, like, in general, what would constitute entrapment?
Entrapment is a legal defense in criminal law claiming that law enforcement officers or government agents coerced, tricked, or induced an individual into committing a crime they otherwise had no intention of committing. If proven, it serves as a complete defense against prosecution. So there's no way they could actually get entrapment.
Like, what did you say? They
tricked an individual into committing a crime they otherwise had no intention of committing?
Yeah, otherwise had no intention of committing. Yeah, there's no... The attorney has to do something.
Sure.
But this is a useless...
Totally. They're grasping at straws. Like, everyone knew it. When they put Marty on the stand, it seemed like she fully believed that she would be able to talk her way out of it. Also, Marty did not have to go on the stand. In most criminal trials, the person being accused of whatever is not typically supposed to go on the stand. They don't have to.
This is the narcissism in effect.
Yeah, and a lot of times when criminals do go on the stand, it goes sideways. But, you know, she thinks she could talk her way out of it, so...
Yeah, because she's so special and smart.
Yeah,
and
super smart, and she can outwit anyone. She was very combative with prosecution during cross-examination. She wouldn't answer questions directly and accused the police of setting her up. She claimed she did ask Drake to buy her a gun, but that was supposed to just be her own personal gun, not a gun to kill her husband. She just wanted it for self-defense purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it wasn't even like, oh, you should also buy a gun, you know, buy Drake. She was like, can you buy me a gun? And then they were like, yeah, actually, I have a guy that'll sell it to you for $50.
Yeah, well, that's even better.
Right.
Because then they didn't even suggest it.
Exactly. But then Dennis took the stand. And that was key for the prosecution because that would show the jury that Marty had been talking about this plan for months before Drake had even entered the picture, which further proves that she was not being entrapped. And that was enough for the jury to pass down a guilty verdict and was sentenced to 15 years. Following her conviction, she stood trial for a second time in 2021 for arson and fraud. She was also found guilty and was sentenced to an additional 3 years. So altogether, she got 18 years. A lot longer than the 7 years she would have gotten with the plea deal. Dennis Bierke took a plea deal for his role in the arson and served no time.
Yeah, well, they probably have to give him some sort of immunity or whatever because he helped put her away.
Yeah, and he was immediately helpful. Like, they were like, do you know anything about this? And he's like, yes, I did it.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't even right, try. Yeah. He was like, oh, yes, I committed arson for Marty Soderbergh in, you know, 2013 or whatever it was. And they're like, oh, damn, all right.
Yeah.
Cool.
And by the way, it was a good job, but, you know, here I am. So did he go on probation or get community service? Like, did he get nothing?
He served no time.
Hmm.
Yeah, nothing.
Well.
Pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, he lucked out.
He did. When Marty was sent to prison, the first letter her daughter Jessica got from her was the prison's catalog, and she marked everything she wanted and needed. In the letter, she said all Jessica had to do was put her credit card information in and send it back.
Yeah, pay for my shit.
Yeah, so Jessica's like, hey, so this letter is not even like an explanation to me or an apology or a hi, how are ya? I miss ya. It's like, here's everything I want from the prison catalog and give me your credit card information. Thanks, bye.
Yeah, just the most selfish shitbag behavior.
Yeah. So Jessica had to take a step back after that and sent her an email that she was done with her. And Jessica said she still thinks about her mother and wonders if she should schedule a visit, but she hasn't.
Yeah, I mean, that'll never go away. That's such a tough emotion to struggle with.
Yeah.
Like, your mom is just the most depraved person. And seemingly cares about nothing except money and stuff, and was willing to kill your stepdad.
Mm-hmm. The man who was apparently really good to you and was the only reason that she kind of turned her life around, it seems.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, she's probably not going to change.
No. Yeah. And also, they had a very complicated relationship before even this. You know,
right.
She said she didn't have a good relationship with her mother until she was 18 years old. And then, you know, however many years later, she's now in prison for attempting to have your stepfather killed.
Oof.
It's tough because you're kind of in this state where you're mourning someone who's still alive, and that never goes away, and that is extremely painful.
Yeah, I know. And they're still alive. They're still around.
Right.
And she's probably going to just keep sending her letters.
Probably.
Yeah, it's just you got to protect your peace, but it's going to be tough. And this feeling is just going to never go away. I mean, it's your parent.
Yeah. You don't get another one. Like, you can have people who are like a mother figure or whatever, but you never get another mother, you know?
Yeah.
Russ waited 5 years to divorce her because Washington State is a common law state. So if she was still in jail, she possibly would be entitled to half of the house. So Russ waited until she was sent to prison. So that way she had no chance of getting the house, even after, you know, she got out of prison, because she's going to be there for 18 years, but she'll eventually get out most likely.
Yeah. Well, who can blame him?
Yeah. And he said he's living a good life now and he doesn't want anything to do with Marty. She gets out in 2032, and Russ said he won't be waiting for her. He officially divorced her in 2022 and is still raising their youngest daughter.
Oh, that poor family.
Yeah.
Wow.
Shout out to Martin Drake for immediately calling the police.
Yeah, he did a great job. Yeah, I hope he gets some help. Yeah, maybe this shocked him out of something.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where he is now. I hope he's in a better place and he's doing well. But it seems like he was in a tough spot in that moment. And I don't know any more than that.
Yeah. I mean, that's a tough place to get out of.
Yeah, it is.
So, yeah, I hope he got help. I hope he's doing better.
Same.
I'm just shocked at how, like, the lack of emotion, morality, the level of manipulation, but also coupled with the sheer stupidity.
And delusion.
Yeah.
That
went along with it. Like, yeah, I don't know. It just seems like mental illness, you know?
I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, right. She also, her first plan was to have him shot and killed on Halloween in front of their children. Like, in front of other children, too, because they'd be out trick-or-treating.
Oh,
like,
my God.
How cold and heartless do you have to have that be your first thought and plan? And you're like, yes, I'm going to have this carried out. Like, if whoever she asked, if Dennis had agreed to do this, that was what she probably told him to do.
Yeah, to just think about
the trauma,
what would actually happen.
Yeah, actually, like, legitimately thinking about that unfolding is a nightmare. Like, that is the worst thing you could possibly do to your family.
Yeah, and then she would act like, oh my God.
Yeah, and she'd put on the performance of a lifetime, which I'm sure she was confident in herself that she'd be able to do.
All for $300,000?
For $300,000. It's not nothing. That's a lot of money. But at what cost? You know? Like, that's an insane thing to do.
I want to be clear here. Life is priceless.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
But
yeah,
$300,000 doesn't even put you up for life, you know?
Right, yeah.
And the way she's spending it, it's going to be like a couple months. And then what?
And then, yeah. And
then what?
Would she become potentially a Black Widow? Marry someone else and then do the same thing? I mean, we don't know, but it seems like she has the coldness to her.
And I quote, "I don't have a conscience."
Yeah, I wish I did,
but I really don't.
Yeah. I would have done it myself if I knew I could get away with it. Like, those are actual recorded quotes that they had from her talking to a man that she hadn't spoken to in 20 years. She knew him in high school when she was 15 or 16. They were probably like casual friends. And then 20 years later, she's like, hey, by the way, I want you to kill my husband. And here's all of everything like laid out and I'm evil. And also, then also, will you marry me?
Yes.
Also, will you marry me and move in with me?
It's a love story.
Also, by the way, I asked another man to do it for me because we slept together and I have him in my back pocket. But he said he wouldn't do it. So will you do it for me? And then we can get together and move in. And will you marry me?
You're my second choice.
You're my second choice, but also you're my first choice. Will you marry me? Because I wanted to kiss you today, but then I didn't. And like, I'm just going to flirt with you right now and laugh about it. Even though I'm asking you to murder my husband in cold blood. It's so crazy. Like,
I know.
How?
It's like, it's just like, it's all of her behavior is a means to an end.
Yeah. And like, I feel bad laughing about it because I feel bad for her family. I feel bad for Russell. I feel bad for everyone involved. But it's like, it's ludicrous the things that this woman thought she could get away with and also how she tried to execute the plan. Like, she really had barely two brain cells to rub together. Like, it's crazy.
It's just like, it's uncomfortable laughter.
It is.
It's just like, it's hard to believe. Yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
I think so too. Yeah, that is the story of Marty Soderbergh and this murder for hire plot. Thankfully, she didn't follow through, or she couldn't follow through.
Yep.
But with that said, why don't we move on and have a bit of a palate cleanser and you can tell me something good. What is your good thing?
My good thing is that I think I'm going to finally get to kayaking this year.
Wow.
And I'm excited.
That's great.
I like to be on water.
Yeah.
And in boat. Small boat.
I love when you're on boat in
with
water.
With paddle.
Yes.
It's the middle of summer. It doesn't get much better. It's lush. It's warm. Yeah. That's my good thing. What's yours?
Great. My good thing is that we are soon going to be up north in Michigan. We don't have a southern accent.
Yeehaw.
But, you know, up at a lake in the northern part of the state with our good friends, which is something that we do pretty much every year. And it's amazing. It's one of my favorite things to do and places to be. It's definitely a happy place for me. And we're going to be there soon. And it'll be
exquisite.
Exquisite. And calm and peaceful, and we're just gonna be silly and goofy and laugh with our friends, which is really my favorite thing in the world. So,
me too.
Yeah.
And lovely and funky and fresh.
Yes. And I've been doing this thing where I make a themed cocktail for the season.
Oh, I forgot.
Yeah.
And now I'm excited.
Yeah. So in the fall time, ooh, I made brown sugar cinnamon old fashions and pumpkin spice white Russians. That was fall. Amazing fall drinks, by the way.
Summer.
Summer cocktail. I'm thinking like an elderflower white wine spritzer. You know, a porch okay. pounder.
Okay.
Really good.
Porch pounder.
Yes. Like
love
a,
it.
A, something you could, you know, casually sip and not get too schwasty, but like you're giggling, you're having fun, and it's really easy to drink.
You're pounding it.
Porch pounder.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my thought. That's my good thing. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of the bonus episodes we have, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. We have so many good ones over there. If you would like even more free content, head over to YouTube and check out Steph Today, where I'm telling stories similar to this one, but you can see my face. How fun is that? If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share it with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. I post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram @nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the TM Podcast is a 3.
Because that makes sense.
And just keep breathing.
Yeah.
Yeah.